you can host the best backyard barbecue. When you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Welcome to the Hawks Talk Podcast. I am Pat Boyle from NBC Sports Chicago. Mike's side with a pair of Stanley Cup champions, the one and only Jamal Mayers and Adam Burrish. Boys, how are you?
I'm great,
doing,
PB.
Doing okay.
Doing okay, despite what we're watching.
Wins. Yeah, I know.
Yeah, it's been rough. Hey, by the way, coming up, we're going to hear from Nick Schmaltz. He will join the podcast coming up. We'll get into his chemistry with Patrick Kane. We'll even talk about a little young whippersnapper, Nick Schmaltz, in his basement in Madison, and one Adam Burrish coming over and playing shitty hockey with them. But that's coming up later. Let's get to this Hawks team that lost their sixth straight at home on Thursday night. Dallas sweeping the season series. All four meetings, and Dallas taking it 4-2. What was your biggest takeaway from the loss to the Stars on Thursday night?
Well, for me, the Stars looked like a team that was confident in their structure, was prepared to let the Chicago Blackhawks make mistakes, and they were going to make them pay when they did, and that's exactly what they did. The Hawks, for me, played well. They played well enough to win this hockey game. There was a back-breaking goal with only 5 seconds left in the second period. That changed the entire momentum and complexion of the game. But you've got to manage the puck better. You've got to find a way to put the puck in good areas, Burr, and not put yourself in danger.
Yeah, coaches always will say, make them earn it. And when you turn pucks over at either blue line, it's, you know, it's one of the cardinal sins in hockey. You hear everybody say it. You hear us say it on TV all the time. But if you turn pucks over against good teams, and especially against teams' top players, it ends up in the back of your net a lot of the times, and that's not making a team earn it. And when you look who you're playing against and you see Tyler Seguin and Jamie Benn, you have to be responsible with the puck. And tonight there was two or three situations that they weren't, and then they're picking it out of their net, and you're starting over back at center ice again.
Yeah, puck management throughout this season has been an issue, you know, and a lot of it has to do with these – inexperienced defensemen. You know, you'll see an Osterley make a mistake. But even on Thursday night, we saw Duncan Keith with a turnover. We saw Duclair from a forward spot, a turn it over in the offensive zone. Well, that was something that you pointed out early on in this game. And it wasn't just the Duclair that led to the Seguin goal. There were other, they actually got away with several other turnovers in the offensive zone.
Yeah, that first period. And it was a good period for the Hawks, but just, you know, we sit here and we watch because we're working, but we're not watching with the same intent someone like Joel Quenneville is on the bench. So I can guarantee you after that first period, he went in there and said, guys, we have to be responsible with the puck against this team around these blue lines, because there was three or four situations in the first period that didn't really come back to bite them. But later on in the game, if you're going to continue to do that, that team is too fast and they transition too well, like most teams in the NHL do now, that you give them those kind of opportunities, you can't play that way.
And here's the thing. The ultimate deodorant, or the thing that can get you over those turnovers, is great goaltending or that key save. And for now, over a month and a half, we're December 23rd was Corey Crawford's last game in net. Anton Forsberg, Jeff Glass have been called upon. They've been average. There's times where you're like, wow, great save. And then there's like, wow, they should have stopped that. And that's – they're not able to help mask some of these issues that we're seeing, namely puck management.
Yeah, I think they've been adequate. I think that they've given themselves a chance to win hockey games. But for me, Pat, it's when you allow goals that you should save to go in. It really deflates the bench and the morale on the bench of the team. I'd much prefer goalies to make the saves that they're supposed to make. And if there's an unbelievable backdoor play and it goes in, we can all live with that. With there's 4 or 5 seconds left in a period, as in the last game, that one certainly hurts and stings, and it's one that you take into the locker, you know, into the intermission, and you're wondering to yourselves, okay, are we going to be able to come back in this? Now we're chasing the game instead of heading into playing against a really good Dallas Stars team tied 2-2.
Yeah, you know, maybe that goal you guys picked up, but you guys talked about it before I did. I didn't really think about it as much as you two did. But you make a great point that you think back to that goal at the end of the second period versus Dallas, and that was kind of the back-breaking goal for me, and I don't think Corey Crawford probably doesn't let that goal in. And it covers up defensive errors, certainly, and it covers up turnovers more times than not. And with a young defensive core, I guess, Jammer, you said it too, it makes you appreciate now what Corey did at the start of the season when these defensemen were even greener. And imagine the we didn't notice the turnovers then because they didn't end up in the back of the net. And now when you don't have, you know, your MVP of the team the first half of the season, well, yeah, it certainly does start to kind of show up a little bit.
And by the way, the latest on Corey Crawford, while he's been back on the ice this week and also working out off ice, he's still yet to practice with the team. And as of Thursday, Joel was not sure whether or not Corey was going to travel with the team on the road. So there's still some ambiguity of exactly where Corey is at. If we see him go on the road, I would think that is a strong sign that he's even closer. And they've got a back-to-back situation Monday and Tuesday night against Arizona and Vegas. So, you know, you would probably see, I would imagine, one of those nights could possibly be Corey if indeed he makes the trip.
Well, you know what, Pat? You know what I wonder is if it's a moving needle. And I wonder if Joel and management are sitting there thinking, you know what? If we don't win X amount of games in the next 5 or 6 games,
right,
maybe that changes the timetable on Corey's
That's a good point.
Return. And maybe that changes the dynamic. If you know, what's the rush in getting him back kind of thing? Let's be a little bit more cautious. So that may play into it as well. If they win a bunch of games in a row, then, yeah, let's get him back as quickly as possible. Let's make a run for this and see what happens. So it'll be interesting to see. I think it's a positive sign that he was able to skate consecutive days. And any type of injury, we're not certain what it is. But when you're able to progress forward and do more, obviously that next step will be for him to skate with the team a few times, but he keeps himself in such great shape. Yeah. I would imagine a couple practices with the team, and he'd be ready to play.
And again, though, it's easy to hang the goaltenders, and I'm with you, PB and Jammer. They've been average, you know, and that's why they're not starting goaltenders making $6 million a year like Corey Crawford. So, but I'm looking at their last 11 games. They've only scored 3 goals or more 3 times, and everybody knows in this league now it's a 3-goal. You have to score 3 goals to win most nights. They get two again tonight. It's really hard for these goaltenders. We're not getting goal support early on in the season too. Corey Crawford wasn't getting as much, but he was able to get what Quinville calls those goalie wins. So you don't have him. Sure, it makes a big hole, but you have to score some goals here. And putting up 1 and 2 goals, a few of the nights, you can't hang that in the goalies.
No, and now the Hawks sit 8 points out of the second wild card spot as we tape this podcast. They are 8 points back of Minnesota. They're 12 back of Dallas, who's got the top wild card. So, guys, they're playing only for the second wild card. And, again, time is running out, 28 games left, and they really haven't shown any bite. I want to talk, before we get to Stan Bowman and the kind of the direction where the Hawks are going before the February 26th trade deadline, I just want to talk a little bit about the lineup. And maybe some of it is showcasing. Maybe Stan and Joel and the hockey ops department are saying, you know, let's put some guys in position to showcase, to move them at the trade deadline. I understand why they went and got Duclair. I haven't seen enough for him to be penciled in on the Taves line each and every night. And another thing that stood out to me on Thursday, Anisimov, he brings something that this team doesn't have, net front presence, a guy willing to go to the front of the net. I just thought the Schmaltz-Kane chemistry is one of those things, you know, that has been working, yeah. And that's not where you're going. Maybe you drop Anisimov off to the third line and let him do that, but that's what Schmaltz was doing. So again, I'm not going to tell Joel. He's a Hall of Famer. He'll forget more hockey today than I'll ever know in my entire life. But some of that stuff just puzzled me a little bit. But maybe there's a bigger explanation, and maybe that is, you know, they're trying to move some people too.
And I think maybe also trying to get more balance in the lines and thinking, as well as Smoltz has played, it wasn't solely because of Patrick Kane,
yep,
which I think was an important step in his maturation. So if he could create and do on his own without Kaner, then we're ahead of the game in the sum of things. So that could have been the thought process. And Joel's not going to sit there with his hands, sitting on his hands and not trying things. He's going to try things to make this team better and to win hockey games. And whether or not they're trying to showcase and do things with different guys, that may be the case. But knowing Joel, he's more about winning hockey games and let those making those decisions figure it out.
Yeah, no, I agree. And with Duclair, PB, I'm right with you on that one. The explanation I would guess that we could get would be that we've got Jonathan Toews, who's the best two-way center in the game. So we can put Duclair there and know he's going to be responsible, because it's no secret that Duclair's weakness is certainly his defensive awareness on the ice. Super high-end speed, super high-end skill, fun to watch. But that what he lacks is the defensive side. So who are you going to put him with, a second-year center in Schmaltz, or are you going to put him with Jonathan Toews, who can kind of cover up that weakness for him? But do I think he's deserved to be there since the second game that he's been here? Probably not. You know, there's probably other guys that have probably earned that opportunity. But, again, who else are you going to put him with that you can really trust him with? And I think Jonathan Toews is the guy there. But I'm with you. I think Schmaltz and Kane, it's tough to separate them. And, again, coaches, a lot of times they look for balance too. But at this point, balance isn't getting you wins.
Yeah.
You know, you might as well just, you know, stack up two lines and play the heck out of them.
You know, if anything, to get Toews going, you'd like to see him cheat a little bit and, you know, take off and not have quite so much defensive responsibility. All the more reason why I would not want to put him all the time. I mean, again, we're grasping at straws here. It's not like there's a simple answer to any of this. I will say one of the positive things, 3 straight games with a power play goal. Okay, we're taking some baby steps. Yep. Seabrook pounding the puck from the point. We've seen now two goals in the last two games off Karams. That you know, he gets it going by pounding it from the top of the umbrella.
And that's exactly it. And early on, the power play was the key for me when Kaner was trying to get the puck to the front of the net to Anisimov. And that, to me, softens up the penalty killers. They're certainly aware that there's a backdoor play. There's a quick play to the net. Then you have to be a little more cognizant, maybe crowd Kaner a little bit more. That frees up Seabrook. He lets that big bomb through. There's nobody in the lane that should be there. And then you're able to react and be creative and get rebounds and do your thing. So I like that they started with set plays and they had a little bit more deliberate attempts with their power play. And it wasn't just all ad-libbed. And I think because of that, and you put Vinny on the other flank, it creates a new look, a new idea for penalty killers to think about. And I think that's what softened up penalty killers.
Yeah, we know that Quinville always has a reason for what he's doing. There's always a method behind the madness with him. And putting Seabrook on that power play, I'm sure it was something that he was really, really wanting to do for a long time. And finally, it was like, this is so bad, we're putting him there. Even though a healthy scratched him a few games ago, 2 games later, he's on the power play on the point. Quinville likes big shots. You know that, Jammer.
Yeah.
In practice, if you go down and you wire it, that's probably the biggest reaction in practice. What a shot! What a shot! And he just loves heavy, heavy when you pound it. So he likes those big, heavy shots. And so finally for him, I'm sure it was like, Siebes, we're going to put you on the power play, and if you touch it, you pound it. Okay,
yeah.
And it's working.
Yeah, and to your point about he likes the heavy shots, there were 32 block shots by Dallas on Thursday night. A lot of those from the wrist shot, the half slapper variety. You know, that's something that he preaches. Let's get to Stan Bowman. He joined us on the pregame show on Thursday. We covered a bunch of topics. Let's start with if they're going to be buyers or sellers at the February 26th trade deadline. He told us, I don't expect us to be buyers. That is uncharted waters for Stan and the Hawks over the last decade. But you know what, guys? It makes sense, doesn't it?
Yeah, it's the reality. It's a moving needle, and he's certainly aware and cognizant and continually evaluating daily, weekly, monthly with his staff to figure out what's the appropriate action. Where realistic are we? Let's be honest with each other. Where are we? And they've made that determination, I would assume, that they're not going to be buyers, and that makes complete sense. And he also mentioned that they will, if it's there, go out there and make a hockey trade, and that they've got feelers out there to make their team better. They're happy with the progression of some of the young guys and where their development has gone. All players aren't in a linear path. They're not going to get better from year to year in a straight line. There's going to be some regression. You just have to look to the Edmonton Oilers, to me. When everyone all summer was praying about them going to the finals, I'm like, whoa, slow your horses. It's not always a linear path where you go right from the going to the second round. Now you're going to go. No. You got to grow as a team. You got to learn something about each other. You got to get to that next level. And for me, a guy like Hartman, who had 19 goals last year, did he take a step back? Maybe he did, but he's learning about more who he's going to be as a player. He's getting back to being the guy to get to the front of the net, shooting pucks, being hard to play against. He still has the skill to score 20 goals. He will get there again. This is part of his path. It's different than Vinny Hinostroza's path. It's different than Schmaltz's path. It doesn't mean that they're not getting better and improving. There's a lot of positive things that he talked about when he was talking about those young players.
Yeah, you made a really good point, Jammer, and I like that everything, and Quinville said it too, everything's not always measured in stats. And it's easy to look, wake up and pick up the newspaper or open your phone and see who scored that game and who didn't and how many games this guy hasn't scored in. And obviously wins and losses are measured, but stats aren't always telling the whole story and everything. And people get caught in these analytic battles and what's good and what's not. And not to bang on Brandon Saad and bag him, but what you, Jammer, you told me the other day, what is he, fifth in the NHL in the Corsi ratings?
Yeah.
You know, and I think if you asked him, are you playing good or not, he would tell you, no, I'm playing terrible right now. Like, nothing's going right for me. I can't do anything. But according to the analytics, he's one of the top five players in the NHL right now. So you have to take all these stats and everything with a grain of salt. And like Stan told us, they're not going to do anything just because everybody wants them to do something. And they assess where they're at, and they're not going to be buyers. But if something great comes up, that doesn't mean no for certain. I mean, he's telling us that, but we all know things happen weird in this league, and they happen fast, and you could wake up tomorrow and a deal is done. So no doesn't always mean no in this business.
Coming up on a future podcast, we'll talk about some players that we think could be moved at the trade deadline. Again, there's a lot of no movement clauses and limited trade clauses that some of these guys have. You talked about Brandon Saad, guys. 14 minutes, 38 seconds of ice time, zero shots on goal against Dallas. I mean, to me, look, the first sign is they take him off the top line. Then they put him on the fourth line. Now he needs to sit because I don't see the bite, you know. And again, I don't see a lot of bite from a lot of different people, but you need to send a message like you're making $6 million a year. We went out and traded a top 10 player who won the Rookie of the Year 2 years ago to bring you back because you won two cups here and you were the wingman for Taves. And we thought Batman and Robin would come back together and it would work. And, okay, so it hasn't worked. You know, that's fine. Hockey is hockey. It's not an easy game. But to not see a shot on goal in 14 and a half minutes it's unacceptable.
Well, you look at him, he started so well. And you think about it, he had six goals, I believe, in the first nine games.
And it was like four game winners or some ridiculous number of were game winners.
And where did he get those goals? Every single one of them were in the blue paint. And I see him shooting a lot of the pucks from outside the top of the circles, from the hash marks, from outside the dots.
Which will get you good Corsi.
Yeah, that's where those Corsi numbers
get you
numbers
good analytic
come.
Numbers.
Somebody needs to ruffle his feathers. Someone needs to be a jerk and get in his face and let him know it's not good enough. And I really like Brandon Saad as a player and as a person. But he is not effective to be a perimeter player. He is not there. He doesn't have a good enough shot to sit outside the top of the circles and take one-timers and risk.
That's why they went and got him, because Panarin was a perimeter player, and they thought Saad was north and south, and now he's staying on the perimeter.
He's got to get
making business decisions, as we like to say, right?
Yep.
So he's got to get back to that, playing on the interior, not always waiting on the wing. Come all the way across the ice if you have to demand the puck and push the D back. At the very least, you're on the inside. You end up in front of the net because of it. If you stay on the outside, you're never going to get to the puck.
Let me ask you this, Jammer. You know a lot of these guys as well as I do on this team. We don't know, maybe you do. I don't know a lot. Probably half of the new guys on the team are the young guys. We talk to them when we're doing the shows. We see them downstairs. They're all really nice guys. I mean, it is a really friendly, nice team, respectful. Do you think there's too many nice guys? Do you think they need somebody in there that can ruffle a few feathers? I know teams that I've been on that have been great. If we were playing this stretch they did and losing was 7 at home now, there'd be a fight in practice.
Oh, for sure.
Number one. And if there wasn't a fight in practice because we all got along too well, we'd go shut the doors at a bar somewhere and get absolutely sideways and show up to work the next morning and get back to work and kind of laugh about it and grind through a day a little guilty together. And it would hurt the next day. But all of a sudden, now we're all in this together. Now we all feel good together. Now we all battle together. For me, all the teams I'm on, I'm just being straight here, it's one or the other. It's a knockdown brawl maybe between you and Saad on the ice. And everybody's like, holy crap. Like, this is serious now, you know?
Right.
Now, good for you, Jammer, and Sauter, you stuck up for yourself. All right, now and then Sauter's going to be pissed off because he doesn't want to get embarrassed like that. So now he's going to go out there, and you hope that you afterwards you guys can sit in the locker room and say, hey, man, sorry, but I want this to get going better. You know, or you're all going out together, you're closing the blinds at a bar, and you're just having at her.
Honestly, I completely agree. I used to tell my wife when I got to a new team, I'd always like to go out with the younger guys because I wanted them to know that I like them, that I know who they're, how many kids there are in their family, what they like to do. Because when I'm telling you I don't like how you're doing it, you're not thinking, what an ornery,
it's not personal,
miserable old guy.
He only comes around when there's a problem.
Exactly.
But yeah, so.
No, I want you to know I still like you,
right.
But that's not good enough.
Right.
And sometimes you need some friction. Friction is a good thing in any business, in any aspect of life, particularly in professional sports. And no offense, I love that. Most important is winning. And the only way you're going to win is if you are honest with each other.
Mm-hmm.
And part of being honest is telling guys something they may not want to hear and being honest. And that might rub guys the wrong way. I could tell you some funny stories about guys I said things to that you would be shocked that didn't talk to me for a week because I hurt their feelings. But I didn't care. They went out and they played harder, and we were winning. And then I said, I hate to say this, but I was right, because look at the way you're playing right now. And they probably still didn't like me, but it didn't matter. You're there to win. So that's what I mean by it's okay to have some friction. It's okay to have some guys in that locker room that kind of stir the pot a little bit, kind of get under guys' skins. And it's okay to get mad and pissed off and have some battle practices, and sometimes coaches can design practice on purpose to bring it out of their players. So I don't know if Joel's done that as of yet. Maybe he knows the complexion of his team better, that's not going to work. Maybe there needs to be a closed door meeting where they have an authentic, honest meeting with each other and get to the bottom of it, because we can say there's so many bright spots. I like how the young guys are doing this. The defense are getting better. That's excuses. This team should make the playoffs, and they've got to buckle down and get it done.
Great stuff, guys. Go get sideways, and we'll reconvene at a later date. That is Adam Bursch and Jamal Mayers. You can see them on pre and post on NBC Sports Chicago all season long. Up next on the podcast, I talk to Nick Schmaltz.
Crank up the heat and turn on STL. On NBC Sports Chicago, host David Kaplan brings his no-nonsense opinion to the table in a half hour on the topics that are trending with our teams.
We got the most mismanaged basketball team in the history of the world.
Which franchise made the gutsiest draft day move? I think Pack wanted to do this, and he finally got his way.
Sports Talk Live, presented by the Chevy Silverado. Weeknights at 6 on NBC Sports Chicago.
Welcome back to the Hawks Talk Podcast. I'm Pat Boyle. It's time now for my conversation with Nick Schmaltz that we had before the Dallas game.
With Nick Schmaltz. Nick, when you look at the player you were a year ago to where you are right now, where do you think you've grown most in your game?
I think just my confidence level with the puck. I think, you know, using my speed through the middle of the ice and creating plays off the rush, or coming back and, you know, playing well defensively and then taking that in transition. So, you know, just trying to get better in all areas still. But I feel like I'm more comfortable with the puck, and I'm making a lot more plays and a lot better plays with it.
You look back to the beginning of the year, like, I remember times where you'd hit the blue line and then you'd make a cut back. And it seems like in the last month plus, more of a willingness or more of a mentality to take it to the net on the outside. Is that something that you have adjusted?
Yeah, I think, you know, there's kind of a happy medium there where if you're getting pushed off or you're getting angled off into the boards, then you can cut back. But, you know, if I can come with speed and, you know, whoever's on the ice with me finds me with that speed, I think I can use that to my advantage and find those lanes where I can cut in and take it to the net. And, you know, that's how you're going to score goals. You got to be able to take it to the net, and you got to be able to pay the price going to the net.
When we talk about chemistry with Kane, we always talk about it on the ice. Can it start, though, off the ice? Like, can it start playing golf last summer or dinner or things like that where it's something he says, it's something you pick up, and it translates to something chemistry-wise on the ice?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, when you really get along with someone off the ice, I think that, you know, I don't know, something about it just creates that chemistry that kind of all over the place, whether you're off the ice, on the ice. I think you develop that relationship where, you know, you like playing with each other, you think the game in a similar way, and you're always looking for each other out there. So it's a lot of fun. I mean, he's a heck of a player. It makes it a lot easier on me, so I just try to get open and then give him the puck when he doesn't have it, and use my speed to try to back off defenders and give him as much time and space as possible.
Was there a moment this year, a shift, a particular play where you're like, all right, that's where it clicks with him, and something I maybe didn't notice at the beginning of the year? Was there like an aha moment chemistry wise with him?
I don't know. We've had a few plays. I think that first game, that spinorama pass against Pittsburgh was, you know, that was like, holy crap, how'd that get on my stick? And then, you know, we've had a few that play in Winnipeg where the spinorama pass backdoor to him. I don't know, just like kind of you just know where each other are without even looking. So you kind of just know he's going to be in this area and try to get it over there. So just kind of learning more and more about each other's games, and when you do that, you feel more comfortable out there, and you know, you just have that instinct that they're going to be there, and it makes it a lot easier.
Things that you're working on right now, where are you at in the face-off circle with where you want to be, and even like one-timers working on that, are those things that you continue to try to improve upon?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, definitely face-offs. Guys are really good at face-offs, and you know, it's a work in progress. Obviously, we want to start with the puck and win those battles right off the opening draw, and you know, start with the puck. That's when we can possess it more, and that'll enhance our team game more. So, and one-timers, yeah, always working on that stuff after practice, trying to get better. You know, goalies are so quick, so you got to be able to one-time the puck, and you got to be able to put it where you want it. So, you can never have enough practice at that stuff, and. You know, you see guys like Kaner and Taser, those guys are always working on it. They've been in this league for so long. So it just encourages you more and more to try to work on your game and, you know, keep getting better every day.
Adam Burr said that, you know, he used to train with your dad, and that when he was at Wisconsin, he would come to the house a couple times for dinner and then go down with you and your brother and play hockey in the basement. Do you have a good Burr story to share with us? Anything that stands out from when he used to swing by the house?
I don't know. I don't know. I was so long ago, I can't even remember that guy's. I don't know how old he is now, but, you know.
He loves to hear that.
Yeah. No, he still looks pretty young, but I don't remember him. I just remember we would always, we were like, I don't know, six or seven, and he was in high school, and we would skate on the hockey treadmill together, and got some had some fun times there. We'd push each other. And, you know, he was a great player at Wisconsin. I always looked up to him. He had great success, obviously, won in 2006. We had season tickets to every game, so we would go cheer him on every night. So, great guy, and, you know, still hang out with him a lot.
Thanks for doing this, Nick. Yeah. Appreciate it.
Our thanks to Nick Schmaltz. Our thanks to Adam Bursch and Jamal Mayers, as always. And we thank you for listening to the Hawks Talk Podcast. That's a wrap for this week's edition. We have a new one each and every week. We'll get you ready for that NHL trade deadline on next week's episode. Thanks for listening, everybody, and we'll see you next time.